Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about supercomputing, high-performance computing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster, Rich Bruckner from Inside HPC, with my co-hosts, Dan Olds from Gabriel Consulting, and Henry Newman from Instrumental. Now let's get to the show.
Hey everybody, time for another episode of Radio Free HPC. I'm Dan Olds, here with, as always, Henry S. Newman from Instrumental and Rich Bruckner from Inside HPC. How's it going, guys?
Wonderful, Dan.
Very well, Dan.
And you?
I'm doing okay. Rich, everything fine? You sound a little quiet there.
Oh, I'm a little under the weather, but I'll bounce back.
What's going on, Rich?
Oh, it's like a childhood ailment has come back to haunt me. So probably an apt topic for today's discussion.
It could be related to the topic I want to bring up, Dan, which is what's exascale going to look like for big data and other application domains?
I don't know. So, Rich, what's the deal with you?
Some kind of virus, but it causes extreme pain.
Well, that's good. It's character building. That will build your character, Rich.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
So, Henry, back to you. Exascale, what does it mean? Applications, what are you talking about?
As usual, I'm talking about things that I'll have to, explain to you, Dan, but...
In rigorous detail,
in rigorous
like you're explaining
detail,
it to
you,
a squirrel.
You want the fine details. DOE is off working on Exascale, and I think that's great for the country. People are working in applications. There's been some funding to work on file systems. There's been funding to work on lots of little aspects of the system.
The jumpstart thing, right?
Kind of the jumpstart part.
Okay.
And the problem I see is that we are having a lot of emerging applications that require Exascale performance in terms of what is needed. Let's say we want to model the whole human body and, how that's going to impact Rich with whatever virus he has.
Thank God. Yeah, some work needs to be done there.
Something, but how to treat it properly. And those applications aren't being worked on. They're potentially are going to require different architectures. We've talked on the show many times about big data architectures. DOE is worrying about checkpoint restart for their applications, which totally get, totally understand. But there's more to the world than checkpoint restart in big data world with genomics, with computational chemistry, with some of the other, map reduce things that are being done and search engines. And I'm concerned that we as a nation are kind of, going to be ending up in exascale focused on one area. We've got this triad of balance that I see where you have computation, you have communication, and you have I.O.
Mm-hmm.
And, within computation, you have different types of computation. Within communication, you have small block, large block. You have high intensity. You have nearest neighbor, so you have different communication types.
Sure.
And with I.O., you have end-to-one, end-to-end, parallel I.O., you have small block, large block. You have all different things. I'm not so sure that we're looking at the broad range of the requirements for different applications and how it's going to potentially scale on our national exascale system.
So let me back up a little bit. Would you agree that the jump from terascale to petascale, that was essentially taking the same architectures and optimizing them? Faster, smaller, all that. I'm just throwing that out.
But Dan, I want to take it up a little bit. We're taking the same applications. It wasn't the architectures. When we went from mega, giga, tera, peta, many cases we're taking the same types of applications, whether it's, in the DOE world, in the research world. We're not looking at these new emerging applications as part of this. And they're looking at completely different architectures. For example, why did NSF fund Gordon? Not a computationally good system.
Yeah.
Computational killer? Nah.
No, but it's the I.O. of it.
Correct. And that's my point. And there's lots of people with certain application types that are just screaming on that thing, doing things they couldn't have ever done on any other system.
So in the jump from Terra to Peta then, to answer my question, we didn't really see a big, there wasn't a big sea change in architecture, and thus not a big sea change in applications.
People bought architectures and communications in the same way they bought communications from Terra to Peta, and they had that same similar communication patterns. Maybe they got spread out more. Maybe they had to, you know, rebalance their grids and things like that. But
not a rewrite.
It wasn't a rethink.
A rethink.
It might have
okay.
been a rewrite, but it wasn't a complete rethink.
But are you saying then that in moving from Peta to EXA, that rethink is going to be required? Because the architectures are going to change profoundly. They're going to have to.
Well, and we're already seeing that. Look at how MapReduce is architected. And tell me how many people are running large MapReduce problems, not side MapReduce problems, large MapReduce problems on traditional HPC systems. Rich, you were at ISC. Did anybody talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, some people were talking about, you know, the basic differences. If you look at like a Hadoop kind of cluster, it's going to have a much different look to it. For one, it's going to have disk on every node because mm-hmm. you want local storage for processing, right? And we got rid of disks a long time ago in our clusters because disks fail, right? We boot off the network.
Yeah, we did that over a decade, you know, about a decade ago was the last time I
right.
saw it in general.
Right. So just those kinds of fundamental differences. Plus, these Hadoop nodes don't have a lot of memory, right? Versus if you look at a node on a big top 500 cluster, they're going to load that thing with as much DRAM as they possibly can.
So they'll max it out, but no local disk.
Nope. Look at the Chinese machine. It didn't have a lot of memory per core. There are certain applications that don't need a lot of memory per core, and they're things that do need a lot of memory per core. And Rich, I would disagree with you. Certain Hadoop problems, when they're doing the MapReduce part, not the search part, require significant memory and significant I/O bandwidth. And if you're doing a lot of searching, absolutely, you know, you don't need a lot of memory. You just need your distributed cluster. But they're people are finding their different MapReduce problems based on, you know, how much data you're ingesting. Are you ingesting data all the time? Are you ingesting it and just letting people go at it?
But getting back to your original premise, these things are significantly different than what the DOE is trying to do, what their mission is.
Yes, and their mission, and it's an important mission, and we need that mission to be successful. But what I'm worried about is that from a national perspective, we get a one-size-fits-all exascale, and we leave a lot of applications behind that are important applications, equally important as what DOE is doing.
And so essentially, DOE is driving the bus because they've got the resources and the expertise and the engineering, so they're driving the bus on exascale, and who out there is driving exascale from genomics, for instance?
Don't know.
That's
I don't
the
see.
Thing.
I don't see it, and I could be wrong. I don't see everything. And who's driving it from MapReduce, and who's driving it from other areas where you're doing, you know, searching in, for example, real-time police searching for things. Like the Boston Bomber.
I would wonder if those guys are even operating at petascale yet.
Don't know. But my point is, architecturally, they're different.
Gotcha. And so computers aren't computers when we're getting to this level. I mean, when you're talking about exascale versus petascale, there won't be, they will not be just a more power optimized and more powerful version of a petascale system. We've talked many times about how the footprint and power requirements make that an impossibility. We're going to see some different animals out there.
You might not need floating point on some of this stuff.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, some people have corrected me in the past. Some of the exascale requirements that have been laid out aren't just for floating point, but they talk about a scalar capability as well. So exaOps. Type of specification.
I mean, if you want to reindex a database that's call it a 100-petabyte database or an exabyte database, reindexing is not a floating point operation.
But it's very compute, integer compute intensive.
Correct.
Well, I guess this comes back to, you know, if you look at the number of codes in the world that are even operating at petascale today, it's really a handful.
That's what I would wonder. Yeah.
Most of them, I think, in the past have been high energy physics, but if you look at what they're doing at Blue Waters, they had an announcement in January of the codes that are running at petascale. And there's a weather code. There's a star simulation kind of CFD thing from Paul Woodward, etc. But, you know, they're trying to expand that, and that's what Blue Waters is about, is sustained.
Yeah, Blue Waters and NSF is funding that. But if we as a country get to exascale, do we have the money to fund not only the machine and the different machines we're going to potentially have and all the applications? And the real question I have, and, you know, I just actually thought of this a second, is do we really have a set of national priorities?
I would argue we have a set of national... I would argue that we have a set of many, many, many national priorities that are all competing with each other.
But
I believe every human being has their set of computational requirements and priorities, ranging from, I got to get me one of them new iPads, all the way up to, you know what, we need an exascale system to be able to run some cool high-energy physics stuff.
But the
and that's the problem, is there's so
the
many.
The question I'm asking is, are the policymakers looking at the broad range of problems and making what's national priorities to solve what they think the most important problems are? Or is, you know, people who are first, and DOE was first on petascale, they're first on terascale, and they have very important problems, are they leading it with their requirements in mind and their interests, which are important interests? And I just want to make sure that we as a nation are making the broadest decisions for our best long-term benefit.
And I would agree that it's probably DOE. It's absolutely DOE that's driving the bus on this, like it has in the past for the other frontiers that you talked about and breaking through those ceilings. I don't know if it's going to change. I don't see anything that's going to change it.
I don't know if it's going to change either. I don't know if anyone else is capable of driving the bus. But
there should be other constituencies at that table.
In my opinion, yes.
Well, actually, we're changing it right now. I mean, we are doing a whole Radio Free HPC episode on this. So
I haven't heard of anybody really talking about these topics.
Well, honestly, they will now. After this gets edited and uploaded, then, yeah, it's going to be a huge groundswell from the grassroots on up.
Yeah. Rich, have you heard anybody discussing these topics? We can edit Dan's out.
Well, I have heard a lot of concerns that what they're selling to Congress is national competitiveness, but that a machine with the parameters we're talking about will have to be so narrowly scoped that it won't be good for doing things like curing cancer and increasing our manufacturing prowess, right? It'll be good at one or two things, which is, probably has to do with the DOE's mission and not anything else.
But let me ask you this. Is it possible, though, that when, like, for instance, when we saw Roadrunner, when that made the jump to petascale, that's a pretty specialized architecture with the cell processors, took quite a bit of wrangling to get everything working right on it. And that we haven't seen another one of those.
Right, right. It was
yes,
so successful, they never built another of that.
No, we've seen, because that...
There were two of them, I believe.
I'm sorry. The cell processor thing started the GPU revolution.
It did.
Start fee.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. And that's kind of where I was going, is that you come out with something that's... The first entrant, the pioneering system that hits exascale, is going to be exotic and different and hard, right, to use. But then people take that revolution and they generalize it, and use those breakthroughs in different ways. So in other words, the DOE exascale system, if we assume that they get there first, may be the tip of the arrow, and the innovations brought about in it will be generalized for everybody else, sort of like what we saw in petascale.
But let me ask you, Dan, that's traditional HPC where they're using fee and other things. Tell me how many applications in big data or data analysis are using fee.
Fee, not so much right now. It's still new. GPUs burgeoning and increasing all the time.
Burgeoning and increasing in MapReduce? Burgeoning and increasing in correlation analysis? Tell me where, Dan.
I don't know where, but I'm sure it is. So shut up. Talk to Rich for a while. No, but Rich, at GTC, there were a pretty good bunch of sessions on data analysis, MapReduce, Hadoop, all that stuff, weren't there? Or am I imagining that?
Yeah. No, there were, and folks there were a number of talks at ISC as well. In fact, I just downloaded the proceedings from ISC to go over some of this stuff. Quite a bit of content.
There is
a lot of discussion.
There's a fair amount of it, Henry, not at huge scale yet, but quite a bit of it happening.
Okay.
So there.
If Rich said it, it must be true.
Well, there you go.
Well, guys, I think we should wrap this one up, but I think one of the next thing we need to talk about is the interconnect. I think we ought to do one on interconnects and what interconnect requirements are going to be needed, because we talk mostly about computation for future application domains outside of what the current focus of exascale is.
I think that's a good idea. We'll use that as a cliffhanger for our next session.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, good talking to you guys.
Always good.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
That's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.